So the instructions are up on the screen. I think you won't find it to be very hard. What I'd like you to do is just read the text, which I've provided there, under qualification of teachers, question one, and I'll put the microphone on in just a minute, too. And just go through it in the text, mark, underline, highlight, everything you have, the things that imply.
Can you put that microphone on again?
Okay.
Someone's going
to put it. All right, I'll do that. How many of you guys are trying? So mark the text. And then off to the right, right down to the qualification. Okay. All right. And I'll get hooked up. Has everybody got the instructions? Read the text that's on that sheet. Everybody got one? Y'all look empty over there. Did we run out?
I have masters.
Read the text. There's some more. And mark the qualifications of teachers. Now, you'll have to be clever about that. Some of them are implied. For example, one verse might say, these people are trying to be teachers, but they don't have this other qualification. So that's an implied qualification, right? And then, off to the right, write down what those qualifications are that are implied in the text. And we're going to take really 5 minutes of quiet time to do this. Those of you that do have sheets, are you having any trouble doing this? You all right? Okay. I would have to say I'm impressed how many people brought writing instruments. We'll talk about writing instruments later this morning, but I'll talk about why that's kind of impressive in just a minute. So how many of you were able to find maybe at least four different things that are implied at least that a teacher needs to have to be qualified to be a servant? How many found at least four? Okay. Do this for me. Turn your page over where you can't see what you've done. And it doesn't really matter. Find a blank space around the margin and so on. And see if you can write four things down just from memory without actually looking at your notes, just of what you just found on the front page. You know what I mean? So try not to peek. But you just finish reading those verses. See if you can call to memory some of those qualities that you thought you found in those verses on the other page. This is a pop quiz, okay? Just write down four things you can think of. Maybe you can think of five or six. I don't know. You can abbreviate to make it faster. Okay, that's good enough. How many of you could remember at least two without working very hard, just in that very short period of time? Most everybody, maybe. Maybe you remembered all four, or maybe more than four, and so on. So here's a simple question. And when you're teaching, there's kind of two kinds of questions. One question is so hard and confusing, no one's going to dare try to answer it. And another one is so simple and obvious that you feel dumb answering it, right? So I've tried to hit right in the middle, and so maybe this is toward the easy end, but would you come to the conclusion that in God's plan, teachers have some qualifications that they need to meet based on the text you just read? Yeah, so this is everybody can just kind of nod. Yeah, I think it's pretty obvious. There's some of them are very explicit, but some are a little bit implicit, either or by because they're referenced negatively or because there's kind of it's another topic, but it describes that. Okay? And do you think this morning already you have learned maybe one or two things? If someone said, you know, does the Bible call for teachers to be qualified? You would say, yeah, I think I know some things. Yeah. Do you think you've maybe at least been reminded of some qualifications of teachers this morning? You agree with that? Okay, that's good. I just want to stop and say, did I teach you that? Have I said anything about what the qualification of teachers were? Wait a minute, how could you have learned it? You can't learn something without a teacher telling you, can you? I haven't actually done anything. I sat up here playing with the microphones the whole time. And how did you learn those things? I didn't do anything. I was wasting time plugging things in and wandering around. How did that happen? You can't learn without a teacher, can you? As a matter of fact, when we're done, I may come back and ask you what the qualifications of teachers are. I suspect you'll remember what you learned just now better than anything else that I've kind of babbled on about between now and then. Is that possible? Why would you remember that better than what I'm about to say? Well, you wrote it down for one thing, but before that, what? You found it. You had to think it through. I'll tell you another fascinating thing. I think there's about 21 verses that we just covered in about 5 minutes. Okay, 10. You ever in a Bible study and you start and you work and you work and class period's almost over and you've only gotten through a couple of verses, right? Someone says, there's no way to cover the book of Revelation in 13 lessons. Hey, we covered 21 verses in about 10 minutes. That's like 30 seconds per verse. How do we do that? Well, wouldn't that be great? We'd never get behind in our Bible studies. How do we cover so much text in such a short period of time? Now, this is too hard a question. Is that the category? Yep. I was only looking for one thing out of those texts. Now, we could have looked for two things and maybe it would have taken twice as long. And is it possible that I could study the book of Romans in about 2 minutes? But how would I have to do that? I'm just looking for one thing. Now, who should decide what we're looking to learn in a particular set of texts that we're studying? Who should decide that? Maybe we'll leave that question open for just a minute, all right? I actually think there are some qualifications, but I want you to see those because you'll think I taught you those things. I want you to know that you discovered them on your own. I want to look at the Great Commission for a second. Go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He who believes and is baptized shall be saved. He who does not believe will be condemned. We quote that verse a lot. And what you see in there is a description of the results of what happens when you preach. Preach. And in the other account, Matthew 28, it doesn't say preaching, it says teaching. Do you notice the difference there? He says, go therefore make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things I've commanded you. Is there a difference between preaching and teaching just based on those two texts there? Now let's approach it this way. When you preach to all the world, what's the result? Two things possible. Two possible results. What is it? Believe or they don't believe, right? That's kind of the idea. We talk about that. They don't believe, they obviously not going to be baptized. All that. We understand that. So really, preaching is a little bit like I'm trying to get almost like divide the world into two groups. How will they respond? Is that the way teaching is described in Matthew 28? He says, make disciples. Who are you teaching, actually, in the Matthew account? Are you disciples? What's a disciple? It's a learner, a follower, somebody who wants to learn, right? Who bring pencils to the worship and study so they can take notes and mark their Bibles up, as an example. You see that? And they prepare their lessons, and so they're eager learners. In fact, if someone says, take out a thing and mark up the text, and they're a disciple, a learner, what will they do? You see what I'm getting at here? This implies a participation and eagerness. That's what a disciple is. And so in Matthew's account, Jesus is saying, look, once you've made disciples of them, now teaching is what you do. And what are you teaching them? To memorize the text? Is that it? Are you teaching them all the technicalities of the dispensations and memorizing the names of the judges and all the kings of Judah and Israel? And what are we learning? To observe. I'm teaching them to observe, which is another implication too, is that disciples are not just bringing their notebook paper. What else is happening? They're making a change in their life. There's different things they go and do as a result of that study. I'm trying to pull the realm of teaching kind of into a little bit different space than we sometimes think about when we just come and hear sermons And sometimes our Bible classes are a lot like sermons too. And that's okay. But if there's a disciple, there's a great responsibility as a follower, a learner. I want to be more like this. And it's not just a matter of coming and being interested and entertained. No, no. I'm here to learn to observe all things. You can think of the passage in James 1. Be doers of the word and not hearers only, for example, as part of that. All right, so you kind of get the idea there. Do you think teaching is an office in the church? Kind of like, you know, maybe like an elder or something like that? Elder or deacon? Is there such a... Would a teacher be like, you know, an appointed office with some measure of authority like an elder would have? I don't mean that they are an elder, but I just mean, is there some analogy at all? I know this is in the hard side of things, or this is in the risky side, because it's yes or no, but boy, it could be yes or it could be no. Yeah. In fact, James chapter 3, verse 1, I think that's what you're referring to, isn't it? Be not many of you teachers. That suggests that, yeah, I guess we all teach by example. I'm not talking about that. But it suggests there's a select group. Well, I wonder, would they have any qualifications? Well, we just covered that. I didn't cover it, but you learned it. Okay, so they have qualifications. Not many people might want to be teachers. There's a greater accountability because they might make a mistake in teaching others. Are there any like lists to the church that list, you know, apostles and prophets and evangelists and pastors and... We learned that yesterday, and you already knew it, of course, but evangelists, pastors, and... teachers. That's a gift. That's a position to the church. In fact, there's some instructions about women not being in a teaching role. Does that mean they can't teach their children? Of course not. It has to do with the position, some measure of authority. If the teacher is an office with qualifications listed as a gift to the church, I think I can put some of these up here. 1 Timothy 1 says they desire to be teachers, but they don't know what they're talking about. James 3, we talked about. Acts 13, interesting. There were in the church in Antioch, Acts 13, teachers. Among other things. In fact, Barnabas went off to Tarsus or somewhere to recruit another man, come be a teacher down there. Who was that? That was Saul. And later they went off and started that journey. Ephesians 4, we just mentioned. These are one of the gifts to the church. So I think it is a positional authority, but how would that authority be exercised? What do I do as a teacher? What's my authority? Sorry, what did you say? Okay, of course I teach the Bible, and whatever it says I do. But I mean, as far as, I know what elders, we talked about elders some yesterday, right? They watch in behalf of our souls. They make the decisions collectively. For example, needy had their goods distributed. How would a teacher exercise authority in that position? Okay. All right, that qualifies him to do it. Those who were here yesterday, we were kind of saying that if you read all the qualifications of elders, there's not much information on what they're supposed to do in there. It just says what they're supposed to be, right? But, yeah.
To some extent, they're deciding, what you talked about earlier, what we're going to focus on in the text. Like the one thing.
Yeah. Right. Is that possible that the teacher might exercise that authority of that position in saying, you know, I think the needs of this group are... for this text we're going to cover today, or maybe I might even pick the text that I want to talk about and say, you know what, I would like to teach you to observe all the things that are commanded in this particular area. So we'll have a class on how to be an elder or how to be a deacon or a leader or maybe just what the evidences for Jesus' resurrection are, because we need to understand that. So do you think the teacher, is it fair for the teacher to exercise their authority to decide what we're going to talk about? And maybe even to say, that's a great comment, but that's not where I want to go. Would that be fair? Would it maybe be beneficial? To say, yeah, I'm trying to change. I'm trying to aim at this particular belief or behavior, and I want to help us all get there. And I've prepared for that, and I believe I'm qualified in studying the text and knowing what I'm talking about. And I'm trying to get this group to that point and change our lives. So I'm going to contrast that a little bit some Bible classes I've been in are more like maybe the teacher's just a facilitator of a lot of discussion that doesn't really have a focus or a time limit or a priority or even necessarily is aimed at changing our lives. And I'm going to tell you that I believe teaching is a position of authority. It has qualifications, and that authority is exercised for the benefit of the learners to help them change their lives. And I'll cite for you the Bible teachers. When Jesus taught or when the apostles taught, whatever sermons we have recorded or whatever, were they like just going to verse by verse and what do you think that verse means? What does that call to mind? Oh, and there's a comment in the back. And that leads to another, but then I was looking up the word and then that reminds me of this other verse. And one time when I was a kid and, you know, right? Is that the way these recorded lessons were conducted in the New Testament and Jesus teaching and all of that? It's interesting to me how many times somebody asked Jesus a question, he didn't really even answer that question, right? Bid my brother divide the inheritance, you know. Did Jesus address that issue? Well, kind of in a oblique way he did. But there was a bigger lesson that Jesus had in mind to be taught. And really, if you look at the apostles' teaching, they do draw from the Scripture, the Old Testament Scripture, but it's all aimed at one point. And those sermons are just, they're getting to this point that this Jesus, whom you crucified, God has made both Lord and Christ. Now, he's drawn all this text together in that one conclusion in which they were cut to the heart. Am I selling you on this idea? I'm overselling the idea, perhaps? Okay. So I'm going to suggest to you that when we're teaching, that as a teacher, we probably should have some goals. Now, please adopt these definitions just for the next 30 minutes, okay? Then you can forget them, but tolerate me. You may have some idea what a goal should be and an objective, but I want you to think about these definitions. I'm going to define a goal. In fact, I think I have a chart that defines it later, as what I want you to think or do differently in your life as a result of this class, okay? And an objective I want to define is something that you can do at the end of the class that I could measure if I needed to. Do you see the difference in that? My goal might be to have you more firmly convinced that Jesus rose from the dead. Now, how would I measure that? Actually, I have a brain cap out in the car, and I put it right on your head, and yes, he believes it more than he did before. There's no way to do that. But I can say, can you list the three Old Testament texts that prophesy of a resurrection from the dead? And I tell you what they are in the class, and we have a quiz, and we write them down, and we do a lot of other things. And at the end of the class, I say, okay, let's take a test. Can you list those three texts or not? You see, I will call that an objective. Does that make sense, the difference between goals and objectives? Goals are behavior changes or belief changes. I would include those. Objectives are a change in skill that I can measure right now, right here. You see that? So here are the goals for my class period this morning. Believe and act on the conviction that teaching is an authority role. How am I doing with that? I'll get my brain cap. Do you think it's an authority role? He's up 10% over when he came in, right? But I don't know. I don't know. I'll leave, and I don't know if your life has changed or not. Maybe over some long period of time I can tell, hey, that just changed the teaching program. The teachers really grabbed that responsibility, and they wrote down before every class period, this is what I want people to do differently as a result of this class. And the class was focused on that, right? And the specific measurable objectives were all aimed at accomplishing that goal. Like the verses we looked at, and the way we studied them, and the things we marked up, and the quizzes that we took, and that kind of thing. Okay? Second goal is I would like to change your life in this way. I want you to prepare for and teach the Bible in order to make changes in the students. I want you to do that. Now, I can't stay around and see if that happens, but I do want to change your life in that way. And everything I do is going to be aimed at that, okay? Now there's some objectives, and we've already accomplished a few of these. And now, is it fair for me to share those objectives with you, or should I keep them secret? No, in fact, especially for adult learners, I think probably kids too. Don't you like it that you've learned something? And you even like it better when you can demonstrate you learned it, right? Hey, turn in the quiz. I got them. I got them all. So there's a sense of satisfaction and accomplishment where you know you've learned them. You know you didn't know this when you came in, and now you know you did. And that there's an excitement in that, and I can see that I'm making progress. Let's see how we're doing. Can you list at least four qualifications for Bible teachers? Now, did that change your life to list those four things? Probably not. I doubt if I move the needle a lot. But it's a start, right? It's a start. Can you list some Bible texts that indicate that teaching is an office with authority and responsibility? Can you list, tell me, can you list one? Chapter's good enough. We did this yesterday. James 3, good. What's another one? Okay, that's women teaching, but yes. But one of the ones we looked at, can you remember? See, I didn't do very good on that objective. Thank you. Ephesians 4, evangelists, pastors, and teachers. That's good. Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, we didn't talk. Yeah, okay. Any of the others you remember we talked about? 1 Timothy 2 talked about, you know, women being teachers, yeah. And how about Acts 13? There were teachers in the church in Antioch. See, I'm filling them in for you. But you see, I'm measuring, and I can see I didn't do too well on that one. We might need to review if that's really important to know where those references are. You see what I'm doing here? These are measurable. That's a good thing. But it's not so good if I don't measure it necessarily. I don't know how to change my teaching. Maybe next time or maybe next week we'll review and we'll have a quiz and make sure we got that one down. Can you list the steps in the flow of learning yet? No, we haven't gotten to that. So that's the next thing. So there's another exercise you'll see on the back page. And it has a multiple choice kind of looking thing. That is, it's called the flow of learning, number one. And again, we're going to work quietly, and you can work with your neighbor. And I'd like you to fill in. All you got to do is put A through F in order, right? Just put them in order of how just generally, typically, you know, maybe theoretically, I don't know, this kind of learning and change occurs. So try to work your way through that. They're not in order now. You know what I mean? Just put a one by the thing that probably comes first, and then a two by the next thing, and a three, and so on.
Okay.
How'd you do? So it's interesting, you know, when you can get people to talk a little bit. And I know this is a little awkward in an auditorium class. I don't know, maybe you do this all the time, but, you know, breaking into groups. The pews are not always set up for that to be done very easily. But, you know, once you learn to do it, it's not that hard. You know, you can turn around or maybe sit in little clusters, and that's good. And it's interesting, as a teacher, I hear this little hubbub rising up, and then after a while it started going back down. I wonder why it was going back down. Maybe people were getting done with their tasks. A little technique is you can listen in on a few of them and you can say, well, man, they are way off. I must have given bad instructions. And so you fix that, right? Or I can kind of look at your paper and say, yeah, they're about done. Or they're off talking about the football game and I'm thinking, okay, it's time to get started on the class. Okay, so but those are just maybe some techniques. So what did you have in the flow of learning? What's the first thing? I don't claim this is inspired or anything like that, but I think it's helpful to think of things in this way. What's the first thing? What's the first thing? Don't pay no attention to me wandering around up here. Sorry. I'll tell you, you can learn facts really as a small child. May not even understand what they mean. My dad always gave that example about, you know, the kids would all sing the song, Jesus loved me, this I know for the world. And say, who loves you? And they all would say,
Jesus.
How do you know? They don't know that. Why don't they know that? They know the song. They've learned the facts. They've learned to repeat things, but they don't, the meaning of it's just not right there. Now, one day, there might be one day, I don't know how old they'll be, but they'll be singing that song and they'll say, this I know, which is kind of like Yoda talk, you know, it's like backward wording, you know, this I know for, oh, yeah, right, I get it. You see what I mean? So, but the information is in there, but we haven't quite, you know, put it in place yet. So yes, that's good. What's the next thing? Yeah, so now this I know because the Bible tells me. So I can put those two things together. Yes, this is how I know this. Or this, whenever I do this, this happens. When the children of Israel did this, this punishment occurred to them, right? This happened before that. You see that? This is the right way to do it. This is the wrong way to do it. This is the way the world thinks. This. You see what I'm saying? Now you're synthesizing, and you can say, hey, that word was repeated four times in this text. Why is that? What's the point of that? So you begin to kind of reason more abstractly about the meaning. What did you put next? Okay. There's some point where you say, I kind of get it now. I see that we're supposed to believe that Jesus loves us. And there's something important about that. And that's really the message of the Bible, tells me so, right? And so now I'm saying, you know, that is a truth that bears really maybe even some application in my life. But I'm not there yet. Okay, what's the next thing? Yeah, I say, you know what? I had that lesson on personal work. I got it. I know the verses that he referred to, right? I even can kind of repeat the principles that he applied there. And you know what? I probably should make some changes in my life. Have you made changes in your life yet? You've made a resolve of heart, perhaps, but there's really not any evidence that's happened yet. You see the difference there? I think, and you could almost see in Jesus' teaching and some of the others, he could get them to almost be convinced that they ought to do something, but it just wasn't there. For whatever pressure, they were afraid of the Pharisees. I don't really know, but they understood what they were supposed to do. The rich young ruler comes to mind, right? Do you think he understood what Jesus told him to do? Oh, yeah, I understand what he said. Can't do it, right? I have not done that. What's the next thing? Pardon? Okay. That's good. Sometimes a little confusion in the last two, but I've tried to word them so it's not that ambiguous. But is that always easy to do, making a change in your life? Does it happen fast sometimes? Sometimes it does. Sometimes, you know, you almost killed in a car wreck or something. You know, something changes your life. But really, those kinds of changes, sometimes they have to well up within us, and we finally say, you know what, I've got to change. Now, maybe that you're just convinced of something more completely, right? And so it happens fairly quickly, and your belief system changes. But it's a big change in your life, and it's a big adjustment in the way you think, especially related to eternal truth, is what I'm telling you. There's another word for that, by the way. What might it be when you decide, I have to make a change in my life? Yeah, I think repentance would be a part of this, although it may just be this is a better way to serve. Maybe too strong of a word, but if we're really convicted and we're trying to be pleasing to God, we might say, you know what, I have not really prioritized the right things in my life. I look good to everybody else. Nobody's going to come to me and complain, but I'm repenting and I'm going to make some changes in my life. Now, it's going to be so easy once you've just said those words, right, just to go do it. No, it isn't. Generally, making changes, especially if they're life habit related, those are hard. They're difficult. They take a great deal of conviction. But if you do it, and you do it again, and you do it again, and you do it again, and you get out, what happens after a while? The last thing. The last one's easy because there's only one left, right? And that is, I just do it. It's a habit. And you know what? If somebody says, why do you do that? I don't even remember exactly why I made it. Yeah, it was a few years ago we decided about it. Oh, yeah, we had a class or something. And we just start. You see what I'm talking about? These habits are easy to follow. And they are convictions, for sure. They're just a part of my being now. They're not something that I have to repent every day and go do that thing. Does that make sense? Boy, wouldn't we like to be there. Now, we talked about objectives and goals. Did I put that in here somewhere? Oh, I didn't mean to say that. Do you see that the course goals are down here? I can't measure those things, but I'm hoping to get you to make a change, make a decision to change. Where would the objectives be in this flow of learning? These things that are just maybe factual or mechanical, but you can accomplish them in a 45-minute window. Yeah, it's maybe for sure at the top, maybe the second, maybe the third you can get, because I might say, list some possible applications in your life. I could almost get to that fourth level, right? But somewhere in the first four. So up there at the top is kind of the idea. I think teachers need to think in both of those terms, right? Because the first one is how I actually know what I want to teach in some ways. And the second is what I'm going to do with my class period time and how I'm going to prepare my material and how I'm going to try to get you involved to write on a piece of paper or talk to each other or answer questions when I ask you. Those will organize what I'm going to do in the class period. Does this make sense? All right. Here's what I would say about the objectives. Remember, objectives are kind of at the top up here. Here's a way to measure them. I just said all this. Goals lead to objectives, and then that determines my activities, and then I actually write down a class plan, including what I'm going to leave out because I'm going to run out of time. I've planned that already. We're not going to accomplish the last objective. But it supports the goals, obviously. It describes student behavior. I usually write, the student shall be able to. That helps me remember. By the way, is it looking at the teacher or is it looking at the student behavior? It's the student behavior, isn't it? So a lot of times we'll write an objective, this will be cover chapter 3, right? Or present the seven something or others. Who is that looking at? That's the teacher. What I want to say in the objectives is what will you be able to do at the end? Not me. What was the student going to be able to do at the end of 45 minutes? So it will be at the end of the class period, the student will be able to, and I can give you a quiz or I can give you an oral kind of questions or something. I can determine if you accomplished that or not. And I'll just stop and say this. You know, we talk about, oh, listen, this guy, he's an unbelievable teacher. What are we normally thinking when we're saying that? Are we talking about his skill and how entertaining and all that? New ideas, a lot of crazy stuff that kept me awake and all that. That's what we mean. What ought we to be thinking when I say that man is a good teacher? What ought we to be thinking? According to the Great Commission. I changed my life. I listened to that and he mumbled around and I don't even know where he was going half the time, but he pointed me to this verse. In fact, he didn't even cover some of the material. He made me get it out of the text and circle it. But I changed my life because of it. You see that? So the measure of a good teacher is not what he says or how entertaining or how great his material is and all that. It's did you change your life as a result of that? Isn't that what Jesus is saying? Teaching them to observe. Do not be hearers of the word only, but doers, right? And you can be deceived, according to James. Thinking that, oh, well, I was in a great class, therefore, and I even listened, stayed awake the whole time. I heard everything he said. I was right with him. I didn't make any changes. So let's measure teachers by the changes in the lives of their students. Our lives, it's us. Okay. It represents change. I'm sorry, wrong kind of change. Here I'm saying if you already knew the four or five qualifications of teachers before you came in, and you know the key texts that illustrate that teaching is a position of somewhat of authority, if you already knew that when you came in, I didn't really teach anything. But I'd like to see maybe some progress, so I need to know where you are at the beginning, and it fits within the available time constraints. So, again, here are our objectives. Can you do this one now? List the steps in the flow of learning. Think you can do that? Could you do it a minute ago? Maybe you could have guessed at it, but you know, you couldn't list my flow of learning. So anyway, that's a difference, right? The ones I made up. So then, can you explain the difference between a goal and an objective? Could you do that if I gave you a quiz or asked you a question? Let's try. Somebody volunteer to tell me the difference between a goal and an objective. Marty's definition. Steve. Right.
In their life. And a class period objective is the fact or connection that one student is able to list or repeat.
Right. Right. A measurable behavior, and it's aimed at the period, not the life. Good. Thank you. So, there you go. Those are my formal definitions. What the teacher wants the student to think or do differently. Hard to measure. Objectives are accomplished during the class period. So let's practice. Can you recognize these? Is this a good or bad objective? Cover the second chapter of 2 Timothy. Okay, why?
It's for the teacher.
It's teacher activity, not student activity, right? List the three images of service in 2 Timothy 2. And it will help you to say this in front. At the end of the class period, the student will be able to, and then read it. List the three images of service in 2 Timothy 2, right? Is that a good objective? Yeah, I think I could give you a quiz on that, right? If I cover it. Take a test on the kings of Judah. Now, that's student activity, isn't it? Well, they take the test, but is it really describing a change in learning? No, I'm just saying, no, you just did this during the class. It's similar to saying you sat in the pew during the class. Yeah, that's student activity, but that's not really a learning thing. The student shall be able to list the kings of Judah and Israel and their years of reign. Yeah, the only problem I have with that is what? What do you think? There's a little bit of a difficulty there. Remember I said it had to be accomplished during the class period? Now, unless you had lots of homework and memorization before the class, that probably would be a little bit aggressive, let's say, to get that done in one single class period. Define Gnosticism. At the end of the class period, the student shall be able to define Gnosticism. Yeah. Is that the same as saying understand all the implications of Gnosticism? In fact, I worry whenever understand makes its way into the objectives. Why is that? I can't measure it. Right, but I can make you regurgitate my definition of Gnosticism, like Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me so. And maybe one day all those words will make some more sense, right? Or later in the course when we start putting things together, they'll have more meaning. But I can get that definition in your head. Understand grace. I already warned you about that one, right? Trace Paul's journey on a map. Yeah, that's a behavior. List two personal applications of the admonitions in 2 Timothy 2. List two personal applications. Now, have I put, make those personal applications? No, but you should be able to say what they are, right? You can list them. And is that kind of ooching our way toward making a change in life? You see how we would do that? Okay, list parallels between 2 Timothy and Titus. Yeah, that's good. Maybe the ones I bring to the... Be less fearful and more evangelistic. I'm sorry. I wish it... That is a good goal, don't you think? We're going to study this a lot, and we're going to start working on that, yeah. List three reasons that Christians should not be anxious. Yeah. And now that might help you, when you think about those three, to be less fearful and more evangelistic. Right? Be on the way to that. Okay. So I have 5 minutes. So here's the difficulty in some ways, and maybe this may be annoying you a little bit. You say, well, wait a minute. We study the Bible. And you know what? We're going to study texts. We're going to take the book of Romans, and we're going to study Romans. Now, Marty, you just picked the verses you wanted to put on the front side of the sheet, and that because they had to do with teaching. But that's not always the way our classes are organized, is it? We say, you know what? We are studying 2 Timothy chapter 2. That is the plan. And is that a good thing, to go through the Bible and kind of think, yeah, we've seen every book, and we need to know what's in there, and we need to make sure we don't miss teaching that we hadn't really even thought about before. But we need to go through it. There's a value in that, don't you think? So I'm a teacher. I have some authority. And I'm going to exercise that by focusing our attention on whatever it is that I think is the most important needed life changes. How do I reconcile that goal? Sorry, it's over here. Right? How do I reconcile that goal, what I want the disciple to do or think differently, with the fact that I have a text here? And by the way, it probably wasn't even written to us. Written to us, maybe for us, but not to us. It might not even be an issue that we are currently wrestling with or other things like that, but there it is. It's in the inspired, all scripture is inspired of God, right? And so how do you do it? So I'm going to suggest a way of thinking about this. The first thing I think you do as a teacher, and I'm skipping a little bit, this is a little bit about the sequence, but I say, what is in this text? I think I need to understand everything, if I can. So I may study a whole lot. Am I going to present everything I've studied? No, in fact, I'm actually so. The first thing I'm going to do is, do I even understand all the stuff that's in here? I confess, I don't understand a lot of stuff that's in text that I actually teach sometimes, right? I don't actually cover what I don't understand, but okay. So that's the first filter. The second is, this is a third grade class. There are some things they can't really grasp at the moment, right? They just can't. Second, they don't have a spiritual need in this area, but they do in this other area, and it's right there in the text. And boy, that's dead on. That's a real important change that we all need to make, and it's analogous to those original readers and writers, et cetera, et cetera. Second, I only have 45 minutes. So I may have to pick in that group and say I can only cover 3 of the 79 things I thought of that would be applicable to us. And maybe leave the rest for an exercise or give some material, whatever. That's all I can really do. So what you have then, over time, is there's a lot of stuff in the text, but it gets filtered out, and the class period then becomes a small subset of that that's aimed at what? Changing important things. You see how the teacher's authority is now exercised to choose what part of the text I understand, students would understand, that they need to change in their life, that I can fit in the class period, and so on. You see that? Now, who is deciding all that? I think the teacher is. And I'll just tell you, there's more information that the teacher needs. Would the teacher need to know about where the students are in their life and what their needs are and who they are and all of that? I think so. It may be somewhat related to or built on the relationship that the teacher has with the students. These are topics they need to talk about, but I'm just not the right one to talk to them about it. Maybe. Could be even that. But I'm just telling you that the relationship with the students and the knowledge of the students is a key part of this. In some ways, I think you're reasoning from both ends to the middle. Who are these students and what do they need? And what am I supposed to cover? And you kind of work both of those together to say, okay, this is what I'm going to do. It's not really left to right like this. I think you're trying to work both ends to the middle. Okay? Does this make sense? I think. And now, what am I going to do in the class period as activities? I'm going to hand out something. Will they prepare in advance? Will I ask them to memorize something? Will I ask them to mark on a piece of paper? Will I give a quiz? Will I ask them to talk together in groups? Right? Will I do something like that? I choose my activities then, thinking about these objectives that I have. Okay. So these are possible activities. I'm going to get there. Did we accomplish these objectives? Can you list four qualifications of Bible teachers? Remember, I didn't teach you that. But you'll probably remember that more than anything else I said. List Bible texts that indicate teaching is an office with authority. Can you do that? Three or four? List the steps in the flow of learning. Can you do that? Explain the difference between a goal and an objective. Marty's definition. Recognize a measurable, achievable class period objective. Yes. List a sequence of preparation steps. No, we didn't get there. But it's okay. That's what I was doing to manage my time. All right. Have I changed your life? I don't know. But that was the goal. I hope now as teachers we think about teaching in a different way. But I can't measure that. Thanks.